SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Tuesday, race fans. Sirius 219 XM 201. Sports Zone 964 if you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well, stevebick.com. Certainly from up here in upstate New York, the capital region, 13 miles east of Saratoga. We're inching forward towards spring. Every day, a little incremental improvement. The sun, getting the sun to shine, really goes a long way under these conditions. The housebound and the stay-at-home lifestyle for now. Having the sun out really, I think, right? Doesn't it cheer you? Or at least if we're watching racing somewhere where it's sunny, it just, I don't know, it brightens the mood. And hopefully today we can, I'm just looking at the lineup. For the most part, I think we can get through without too much angst, and there'll be a little bit the angst index. Maybe we should have a scale. Sid Fernando actually is going to join us early because there's a couple of things that I want to do with Sid today that it's partially pedigree related and breeding related. But Sid wrote a very important piece the other day. Thursday, his column taking stock in the TDN, and it has received a great deal of attention from commercial breeders, not just commercial breeders. So we're going to discuss Sid's piece, which is entitled Fear Index and Foal Crops. And there's some important and interesting, financial market indice breeding correspondent comparisons that Sid unearthed. And I won't say unearthed because I imagine he's been looking at this, for a while and is well aware. He talks about the volatility index. And so we're going to touch on this. And also yesterday's news from Chuck Fipke. And of course, Sid, very close to Mr. Fipke, and Charlie Fipke with a incredibly generous gesture announced yesterday. He's waiving stud fees on any of his stallions, and they stand in a variety of places and really kind of all over the country. Some regional and as well as Kentucky. And of course, when we had John Phillips on recently, we did touch on a little bit the 50 stallions that stand at Darby Dan. So Sid will address that too, because Sid was instrumental in the press release. But Mr. Fipke, because he has some lower profile stallions that basically are being utilized by smaller breeders, he really sensed the importance of helping the small breeder who he specifically feels is being pinched under the circumstances. So really a awfully generous, supportive gesture by Charlie Fipke. So Sid will talk about that too, how Mr. Fipke, you know, arrived at the decision, etc. But I really want to talk with Sid in hour two about the piece from TDN from last week, and then tomorrow we'll do our regular pedigree discussion, and very specifically, Mr. Big News with a fascinating page that you know, came up yesterday with Brett Calhoun, obviously, in that discussion. So I think the only I think the only, you know, difficulty, ambient circumstance conversation will be with Sid. The rest we want to be excited about whatever opportunities we've got, and that includes, of course, a couple more days of Will Rogers and Fowler Park. Going to have a visit from Marcus Hirsch after the first break, actually, and Marcus has been doing a lot of lead handicap type work in the form for the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday tracks. And there's actually a couple of stakes the next 2 days at Fawner. And just let me slip through here. Today, the $10,000 Runza for fillies and mares, three and up, going six. And then tomorrow, there's a mile stake that closes out the card, a $15,000 three and up mile, the Dowd mile. So stakes for Monday and Tuesday, and the Fawner and Will Rogers show has continued. We'll get some insight from Marcus, see how he's approaching it. Yesterday, before I tell you the rest of the action and the rest of the lineup today and what's ahead, yesterday, and actually I'll start at Will Rogers. They've added this pick five. And yesterday, and I did not see a total, I did not see total handle yesterday from Will Rogers. It wasn't included in the chart, but at least the chart that I saw. But the pick five, got to mention, handled $177,500. So, I mean, this thing is what? 10 days old? Not even. It's about six cards or seven cards old, the new pick five that they've thrown in, and 15% takeout. And yesterday, it just seems that at both of these tracks, you get, you know, you get some surprises, and I'm sure people are adjusting yesterday, or trying to adjust. Yesterday, that pick five starts in race two, goes race two through six. And so you had a couple of low-priced winners. Jody Pruitt for Danny Caldwell with Quicksilver, paid $7. And then Joe Ofwalter, who we know from Remington, for owner Brian Hawk, Shanghai Sally pays $5.60. But then it got a little squirrely, and you had a $20 winner, Jory Farrell, sent out Victory Stripe, paid $20.80. And then the big number, Mark Buehrer for Raywood Farm and a homebred of theirs called Kuchen, $91.40, wire to wire. And that put the spurs to that pick five. And then it closed out with Alexis Cordero Lopez, a horse that she owns and trains, Fred's Country Boy, as the favorite, a little under 3-2. A Country Day gelding. And here, by the way, Country Day, whenever he pops up, I'm always quick to mention. Country Day standing down in Louisiana, and, of course, the Klein family. He's kind of a house stallion for the Kleins, but he's available. And, boy, does he get runners. you know, from, you know, modest mares and modest opportunity. I mean, Country Day. But the number, when it all came back here, the pick five paid $82.54. And really, I mean, the $20 winner was a little tricky, but not impossible. It was the $90 winner that obviously made the big difference here. So, you know, it just feels like with all this limited racing, there's just been one, you know, one substantial payout after another, whether it's pick threes and pick fours, pick fives, etc. And you actually at Foner yesterday closed out with a price that boosted the pick four, and it started with a substantial enough price. Jaff Mills Inferno for Gil Akofi and a 35.80 mutual. I take that back. That was not the start. The start was the $18 horse, Maddie's Pro, for Isai Gonzalez, who is winning races by the bucketful. Then you had a $20 winner, Sneaky Meek, for Stetson Rushton. That's the other Stetson. there's the two trainers named Stetson that send them out. And then you had a Bunch for Lunch, 720. John Ness, owner trainer, and then Waka 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 at 2380, Mark Lemberg. The late pick four paid $10,567. So there's gold in them there hills. a little bit. If you are hanging in and playing Will Rogers, we'll see what and Foner. We'll see what insights he has. And also we'll probably do it just because Marcus is another guy. You just heard, if you were listening to the replay, you just heard Steve Anderson, you know, talking a little Australia. So we're going to continue to try to help you, you know, find some places to play, especially if you're a night owl or an early riser with the Australian action. And every day there's four, five, six tracks to choose from. Tampa adds to the menu tomorrow. So Will Rogers, Foner, and Tampa tomorrow. I've actually got a call in to Peter Berube. I got a couple of things I reached out to him about. And we're curious if Tampa, given the way things are, if they're considering adding some dates. You know, it's pretty unregulated, the date situation in Florida. So I'm curious where things stand. So we're trying to get an answer on that topic. And then on Thursday, of course, you've got the A-tracks come back, Oaklawn and Gulfstream on Thursday. So there's your midweek action, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So I'm just let me answer a quick text here, and we'll get back at it. All right, a couple of pieces of news, and lay out the lineup for you. Kim Weir is going to join us from TRF after Marcus, and they've been doing virtual tours of some of the TRF farms, and they do it on Zoom. I hope we'll find out from Kim if it's, you know, password protected. I saw some security suggestions yesterday, you know, with some of the nastiness that's gone on online when it comes to these gatherings. There's some protocol, so we'll find out from Kim the details. They're going to do a farm tour, and they've got a special guest involved that I think sounds interesting. 4 o'clock for a TRF feature, and we'll find out from Kim how they're making out at the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, which is, of course, the largest maintaining post-race career organization in the country, with literally a herd of hundreds that are spread around the country. And you know, TRF has, in a lot of ways, the most difficult task, because they, when they take a horse, it could be for 15 years, could be for 20 years. So TRF has as difficult, you know, an assignment as any of the agencies that look after horses off the racetrack. So Marcus Kim Weir, Sid Fernando, John White. We'll get to John today. Andy Serling, start of hour three. And more. We might get a little Will Rogers visit in as well. Perhaps Scott Young, I think, is going to join us. Piece of news that you must have seen yesterday and late morning. A press release from Saudi Arabian the Jockey Club, the Jockey Club of Saudi Arabia. They are withholding the purse money in lieu of an investigation that they're conducting regarding Jason Service and Maximum Security. So they, I'll read from this. JCSA is conducting its own investigation in respect of the allegations, and until that investigation is concluded, JCSA will withhold payment of prize money due to all connections of horses placed in prize-winning positions in the Saudi Cup Race 8. This decision has been communicated privately to connections of Saudi Cup runners. There you go. And also, they say, obviously, the corona situation has kind of slowed some of the processes involved. This is an interesting note. The JCSA utilizes a French drug lab, Laboratoire de Course Hippique, to handle the drug testing for its races. Interestingly, they also announced that Monday that they had called a positive for cobalt in Sun Hat. So, and Gary West commenting that he agrees it's appropriate for them to conduct their own investigation. So, and of course, you know that Jeff Bloom had called for Saudi interests to elevate Midnight Bisu. Yeah, there you go. So that was yesterday's development on that front. We'll head to the break. Marcus Hirsch, the Daily Racing Forum, joins us to get things going. Kim Weir from TRF, Sid Fernando, Sirewatch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale, John White, Andy Serling, and more. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice is sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Dunner, rapper, done right, an extinguished crutch of a roller inside. Yellow fingers, nothing lasts, but nearly everything lingers in life. Cell phone service is not that expensive, but that takes commitment and you just don't have it. Feels so effortless to be a stranger, but feeling foreign, such a lonely habit. You can't crop yourself out of the picture, out of focus, but still framed inside. Well, the end got blurry and my heart started hurting for you.
We're back at the races, 20 minutes into hour one on this Tuesday. And of course, Tuesday now means Will Rogers Downs and Fonner Park. The fun and excitement continues. Marcus Hirsch joins us from the Daily Racing Form as we all pan for gold in unfamiliar brooks and streams. Good morning, Marcus.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Hanging in. Doing all right. How about you?
Yeah, same.
Well, we have no choice, and we don't know. We don't necessarily have a script for how long this continues. So we're making the best of it. And you're remarkable because whatever unusual set of wagering opportunities manifest themselves, it seems it falls to you and Mary Rampolini.
Well, I mean, there's not that much to go around right now. As you can imagine, there's been some considerable realignment in the way that the work at the Racing Forum is structured right now. In particular, my schedules, I was going to be doing Keeneland analysis and, had all these tracks around the Midwest starting that I cover, Arlington, Indiana, Canterbury, Prairie, so on and so forth. International season, the European racing season starting. I was given different assignments over the last. I was doing some Golden Gate, which I was getting into, and then they closed down. And then I was thrown some Will Rogers and Fonner. Like yesterday, Monday, was But I think that'll easily be my busiest day of the week because I have my own stories. Tuesday and Wednesday, Will Rogers and Fauna. I'm doing the selections there most days, and I'm still doing the Hong Kong stuff too. So, and they have a Wednesday night card at Happy Valley. So we had a busy day yesterday, and then tried to catch up on the races. They were running yesterday afternoon in Nebraska and Oklahoma.
So, as I suggested, there's plenty that's got you occupied. And before we talk about some results and getting, you know, your perspective on how to approach Fauner and Will Rogers, I got to ask about last week because you had the reporting about Royal Ascot, which is going to try to. It seems that they're going to try to run and do it spectator free.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anything's been firmly decided yet, has it?
No, but I hadn't seen a whole lot of conversation
right.
About it other than, you know, the mention under your byline.
Sure. Well, what I took away from that was it was an announcement more than anything that there wouldn't, like, you're not going to be able to go to Royal Ascot. So it was, if they run, they won't be running with any fans there, so cancel all those plans. Now, whether they run, I think, I think we're going to have to see in the next few weeks how things go. It's just one of those too early to tell situations, which is hard because people want answers, but that has been kind of a general takeaway from everything that's happening, racing related and otherwise, in this whole situation that began a couple months ago. Because I mean, we don't have blueprints for how these things work out, so we don't know the answer to the questions people are asking about when things are going to happen. I know that it does seem like Great Britain is behind America in terms of the trajectory because of when things were shut down. I haven't actually looked at any particular stats recently, but I would think that things are going to be happening there a little bit behind here, so they may be able to take cues from what happens in the States or other places too. I mean, that's one of the things we see, is that when we do get some data and modeling from countries that are farther ahead in the timeline, it does give you at least some way of projecting how things might go where you live or what your concern is. But like, as far as having racing now in June at that venue, I think that's going to depend a lot on what happens just in the next couple of weeks with the decisions that the government generally and the British Horse Racing Authority particularly make about the safety of stuff. I mean, it's one thing to keep it going, I think, and it's another thing entirely to start it up again. If you can, these tracks that have kept going in the States, I think we've seen that they've probably refined their protocols and established circumstances that are acceptable to local health officials and safe for the participants to the greatest extent possible, but then reinstituting something from the ground up after you've already shut something down entirely, I think, causes a lot more difficulty and is a higher barrier to climb.
Well, and as you mentioned the Hong Kong coverage, and we discuss Hong Kong with Dick Powell weekly, and.
Yeah.
They, of course, you know, were affected earlier and immediately and quite forcefully. And, you know, they started with, you know, certain restrictions, cut out spectators, and then even cut out, credentialed people. Now you can see that they're slowly, you know, letting, you know, some people back in to Sha Tin and Happy Valley. And so I think venues and the racetrack management is kind of looking at each other. Obviously, what's going on in Florida and with Oaklawn and the two Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday tracks, and also Los Al and Remington for the quarters, there's obviously a blueprint to get through this. And we do also have some racetracks that are supposed to be opening in the coming weeks, including Prairie Meadows. I talked to Bob Nastanovich yesterday, Marcus, and it looks like they're hoping that they could get going in early May instead of in 2 weeks or 10 days, the original opening. So I think everybody is kind of got fingers on the pulses. New York would love to get going similarly, but they're not going to do it under the, you know, the terrible situation, you know, in the metropolitan area until things abate or at least stabilize. So, you know, this is it's a fluid situation.
For sure.
Let's take the opportunity to talk about what you're seeing from these two ovals that are running the beginning of the week. And, you know, we talked to Chris Katulak, and Katulak last week, Marcus, nice enough to, you know, volunteer to come on to talk about the DQ after Tuesday's, unfortunate situation. But what's your feel for Fahner and Will Rogers and what, you know, what themes have you sort of touched on?
I actually kind of like Will Rogers so far. They are averaging just about 8 starters per race, and that number has ticked up recently as people have started shipping more horses there. It's a very dynamic product. I can't imagine that it's ever really been this way before, although I haven't followed the meet enough to say so. There are just so many. The horses coming from so many different places. You're getting horses that last around the Turfway, as far afield as Charlestown, some California horses, a bunch of Turf Paradise horses, horses in from Fairmont, lots of Houston horses. Obviously, that's pretty standard. But I do think that there are a lot of vectors coming into the same small space that complicate analysis. But what I like about the track is... from what I've seen so far, I think that it's been really fair, a fair playing racetrack, inside, outside. In fact, you know, outside closers do have, a lot of days have a pretty decent chance there, although I do think the rail has been good on occasion. But to me, that's, you know, it's just one of those, it's a track that falls on the farther along the spectrum toward, you know, how the race particularly shapes up and the character of the horses involved determine the outcome more than the nature of the surface and the configuration of the track, which I always like to see. The home stretch is pretty long enough to sort things out. You know, you get plenty of time to get out and find room. I'm not saying there are a bunch of all-star riders there, but the jockey colony seems competent enough that the races make some degree of sense. And, I like what I've seen so far. 36% winning favorites so far this meet, just overall, which is, like, on the low end of standard this day and age. I think yesterday and recently with a bunch of bombs, a lot of prices, not horses that were totally impossible, but just races where you could maybe stand against some overbet favorites. I mean, they did have a couple tote delays yesterday, which were unfortunate, but... for the most part, I don't see any issues with getting involved with that track at all.
Nice. And I did see yesterday late in the card, I saw a couple of tweets from you. You mentioned the colony, you know, the horsemen, the base of the horsemen, of course, are, you know, the Texas Oklahoma circuit and guys like Scott Young and Joe Ofalter, et cetera. But Steve Asmussen, but jockey
Asmussen is running there. He's never really run there much before. He's run, I noticed that like 2 weeks ago. Sorry to interrupt, but he just, I mean, that's an interesting dynamic to follow as well, because that's not a standard stop for him this time of year. The way that things have shaken out nationally has changed the way his barn operates. They had a couple winners, but I would say that as a whole, the group of Asmussen runners has underperformed their expected level based on odds so far this meet.
Well, and of course, you know, he's also coming off of just that dreadful stretch at Oaklawn, which everybody, you know, was aghast over and carrying on about.
I mean, if you look, I saw, I can't remember who did it. Somebody did a deeper study where, like, his horses had generally improved their biofigures by a substantial margin in that sample. Additionally, like, he had, like, when he had one win, he had, like, 10 seconds or in 5 thirds.
Yes.
I mean, it's one of those things where if you had swapped the wins and the places, you would say, oh, this guy's on fire. I mean, we do tend to get carried away without just acknowledging that there's a lot of luck involved, and just a foot here and there can make a winning streak into a losing streak.
Well, and to address, you know, the kinds of horses he might be sending, it just so happens I reached out this morning to Clark Brewster, and Clark's got a couple of he's got one with Scott Young today, and then he's got one with Asmussen, maiden special starters, and I saw that these were horses that had been the Asmussen had been working at Louisiana Downs, so it's kind of like as you're hinting, you know, there's kind of this melange that has come together impromptu, and I guess I guess at a higher level, Marcus, what happened this year at Oaklawn with the influx of California trainers, as well as some people like Jeremiah Englehart and, you know, some Easterners that went to Hot Springs, it would make sense that there's, as you suggested, some dynamic results and some opportunities.
Well, people who follow Oaklawn a lot more closely than I do insist that it's more difficult to win races there this meet than it has been in the past, so I'm going to take their word for it. You mentioned Clark Brewster and Asmussen. Starters that Will Rogers, they have almost all been maidens or allowance horses. He's trying to knock out some maiden and first-level allowance conditions with some horses that have some pedigree that you wouldn't want to run for a tag, but maybe he's running at Houston or based over there. And then with that, they had a couple little stakes and the higher-end allowance races. He sent some horses from Oaklawn that were competitive there. Those horses didn't perform up to standard. The maidens have been running okay. Mentioned Scott Young, he got off to a tremendous start. I think he was 10 for 25 a couple weeks into the meet. I think he's like 3 for his last 45. I mean, that's just the way these things go. You know, they run in cycles. He won a race yesterday, the last, with this. He had two horses in a main claim and a longer price one. He's been a trainer to fade recently, just because of the cyclical nature of where your barn goes. Diodoro, last racing week, I think, went 8 for 16. I think they had 13 or 16, and third or better. His horses weren't as effective yesterday, but he has a major regular presence there. Oswalter, you mentioned, he had two winners yesterday. You're getting some horses in from Kentucky now that kind of make it a little bit interesting. Anna Mia had a horse. She shipped from Keeneland. Bill Morey has shipped a few horses there from Thoroughbred Training Center. I like it. I mean, I like all these different things to have to consider. I think it makes for interesting racing and really trying to piece together all the disparate material that you have to work with. And I think it can create some degree of chaos, which is, as somebody who's not hammering favorites and looking for more, you know, like getting a price here and there, that's beneficial to the way that I approach things.
You know, there's also a certain harmony to these offerings, because it's basically six furlongs, you know, a couple of five and a halfs, or a mile. I mean, there's not like a huge variety of configurations to deal with, and so you get kind of a consistency that I think a lot of people like.
Yeah, I haven't seen much beyond a mile. They do go down to 5/8 more than they go out beyond a mile. That's just the kind of the character of the region, which they focus on sprinters and quarter horse racing. But I mean, there are some tracks where maybe it's more of a burnout thing, where you kind of just at the end of a long meet or after years of doing it, it starts to get stale for you. So for me, from my brain, it's stimulating to look at a bunch of information that doesn't just fall into the regular worn grooves in the way that I look and think about things. So that's definitely been the case with Will Rogers.
There's a very good sequence today. The late pick four has got back-to-back maiden special weights. Maidens specials are running for 19,000. Then there's a first level allowance for 21,000, going a mile for three and ups for the boys. And then it closes out with a filly and mare, 7,500 non-winners of two lifetime, where, you know, there's a couple that seem more likely than others, but not a bad sequence at all. They've introduced this pick five, Marcus, and I discussed it to open the show. The thing's been an instant hit.
Yeah, I haven't gotten involved yet, but it is attracting a lot. Is it everyday pay? Is that the deal with Constellation?
Yeah.
If no one hits, well, I mean, yeah, I think that was a really good idea, and it deserves to be popular. I like the structure of that bet.
Well, yesterday, $8,254, 5 for 5, and that you had to get to that $90 winner in the fifth of Mark Buehr's.
That was a tough one.
Yes, it was. There's no doubt.
Also, I mean, realistically, looking at these maiden claiming races like that, the favorite was, I thought, very vulnerable. And there wasn't much to it. There races like that, you can get down to some big prices if you have the capital and wherewithal to spread out enough. I mean, I would suggest, my thought is, in situations like that, always throw in the bigger prices. I mean, as unlikely as they seem, the whole point of the race is that you don't really know what's going to happen, right? I mean, so you want to be playing for the chaos element rather than trying to use logic when you've failed already to apply logic because you see that there's not enough information to go on. And yeah, I do agree with you about the late pick four. I'm planning to get involved myself to some extent just because I liked the sequence.
You've got an opinion to offer at Will Rogers for today?
Well, I mean, I like this horse Sugoi in the featured ninth. I mean, I don't love him. I think he's going to get bet down from his morning line, but I would use him prominently. I just noticed Bill Morey, his horses have not been that sharp at Will Rogers as he's sent so far, but he does have an extensive history of going synthetic to dirt because of his time in California. And if you boil it down even more to synthetic to dirt and sprinter out at the same time, I think he was 8 for 8 in the money with 3 wins over a decent period. I mean, obviously that's a relatively small sample, but it does suggest that he's made good choices when making that move. I mean, let's see, what else did I have in here? Oh, I thought the Mile Maiden was really tough. We were talking about Asmussen, and he had a couple in there, and I settled on Tap Solution, who we ran for 50 first, ran an even race. The 6 furlong race there looks like a mile waiting to happen, but that's not a huge play. He also has a horse that's going to take a lot of money, Lady Laura, in the race before it, the maiden sprint. I thought there were several possibilities in that race, and I wouldn't be too focused on Lady Laura personally.
I see. Also, you included Quick Calicia and Hallie's Dream.
Yeah, I did look at that race pretty closely. And Quick Calicia, I thought between of the two locals that had shown something, I liked her more than Hallie's Dream by a couple lengths. And then the first time starters I looked into pretty closely, and I'm a big first time starter picker. I think that's one of the things that I'm best at, actually, at handicapping for whatever reason, and have been for a long time. I guess for one thing, is I'm just not afraid. I mean, I love picking first-time starters, especially when they don't look that obvious. But I couldn't get to any of those in my top three in that race. It might come back to haunt me, but I just didn't like those horses.
The one that I would just bring up, because I talked to Clark. He's got Pussycat, a Tapiture filly.
You got to watch the Tapiture's first time out. There's no doubt about it. And we saw with the $90 horse you referenced yesterday, that trainer had not won with a first time starter since 2013. But I will say, if you're playing the long term and pretty decent sized statistical sample, that trainer's got young. He has had a long run of not winning with first time starters. His 5-year numbers look okay, but I don't know. Maybe, I guess one way of looking at that is, it shows that he has been capable in the past, and maybe it's just been circumstance more than anything that has not, that's led him not having a debut winner in his last however many starts. It's been a slow spell in any case. And there is one major tell on this horse that I often find to be useful, and that it shows a low purchase price and debuts in a main special weight, which is often a very positive sign.
I also like the fact that that Scott Young's been drilling her from the gate, and she has shown some lick out of the gate. Just 6-1, but Lady Laura, Quick Galicia, Hallie's Dream, all seem logical to start that pick four. Let's turn to Fawner, Marcus,
yeah,
and talk a little bit about, you got a stake today, the $10,000 Runza.
Yeah. I'm getting these cards mixed up. I think, oh yeah, tomorrow's card, X, with a stake.
Yes.
Today's card, this was, they packed in the allowance raises at the end of the day.
Yes, they
good
did.
Card too. It's a very good card. So I know people were up in arms about the DQ last week. I didn't think it was that egregious, and I didn't have the same response, I think, as the majority of people. I would say, like, in a general sense, this is another track that is new for me over the last, whatever, 3 weeks, 2 weeks. But I do handicap Delta year after year, so I have some bullring familiarity. This is different than Delta from what I can tell so far. Talk about general riding colonies and the way races shape up. I mean, this is a little more chaotic to me from what I've seen. Part of it is the track is just so damn tight, and the turns are like so many horses struggle to negotiate them at times that it can get a little messy. These four furlong races they run, I mean, those are basically just quarter horse races. You know, they just go as fast as they can, and hopefully you can hang on. When I first started, I looked at some long-term post position trends, and surprisingly, there were almost no biases that I could tell. You'd think with especially the six furlong races, which start close to the first turn, it's a two-turn six furlong, you'd think that outside posts would be poor, but that wasn't the case. Really, you saw a tiny downtick from 9 and 10, but for the most part, it was fair. The only real, like at a mile, which they don't run much, if there have only been 10 miles so far this meet, that's where the outside posts, if you look back, you know, many, many years, that's generally deleterious. These half-mile races, so 38 out of 65 winning favorites so far this meet, 43%, I guess it's kind of what you see is what you get for the most part. Speaking of post position, I just noticed that a lot of horses drawn on the rail end up having a good go of things, whether they go to the front or they sit, because it seems like horses, because of the way the turns are structured, the horse on the lead or horses near the front are often not cornering that smoothly, so the rail often opens up, which is what led to that unfortunate disqualification, in fact, because so many people are waiting for that gap, which usually comes. So what I noticed especially about this track is, I guess you could call it, it's a circumstance track, like being in the right place in the race for the dynamic of it can mean way more than current form, if that makes any sense. Like, if you happen to be sitting third behind like a slightly too fast pace and the front runners collapse and you just inherit the lead and then the race ends before any of the faster closing horses can get there, like horses that are in the right spot can fall into a win kind of accidentally. I think you see that quite often here, where trip is just everything because of the nature of the way the races are run. I mean, it's really hard. And you see, like, the horses that are specialists at the track, and there's one in that stakes race today, Love at Night, I think her name is, they have to run the turns well. You have to be athletic and agile and either just, like, hug the rail and be super athletic in that way on the front end, or be one of those horses that's able to pick up your pace and pass horses on the outside, which takes a kind of a special animal the way that's configured. A lot of the times, it's just a question of getting around there more than improving your position. And then if you haven't improved your position, you know, you got a 700-foot stretch and the race is over.
And, you know, to tie a couple of things that you just referred to, and you mentioning Delta, I think, is an important factor. And I brought this up last week with both Tony Black when we were talking about riding a bull ring, and with Katulak too, in his explanation and in his discussion with the stewards. And I think the, to some degree, Marcus, the outrage that that emanated from the DQ, I speculated last week. A lot of people are looking at a bull ring for the first time, and they don't necessarily comprehend how different those turns are from a mile track and any larger configuration. And so, you know, horses stacking up on the turn and running into those kinds of issues, it's a race by race occurrence. I mean, you watch, any bull ring, and invariably there's just tons of hurly burly.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Sportsman's Park, which was not a bull ring, but it was a tight turn track, and I mean, people will talk about that all the time, how those races got incredibly rough, and you had so many moving parts all the time. I imagine riding it, it's just like everything happens at so much faster rate. Like if you run a 6 furlong race, boom, you're on the first turn. You got to get your horse to corner and get position, and then you just go down the back stretch, and maybe you're finally getting a rhythm, getting sorted out, and then you've got another turn, and you got to start asking even before the turn if you're farther back, because you can't wait. I mean, you got to go. If you got a closer, you got to go before you get to the turn, or you got no chance to get any momentum. So things happen quickly. It's a very dynamic scenario, and you know, I think that it takes a lot of, I would imagine it takes some repetition and practice for jockeys to figure out. Yeah, and then you've got to account for all the different types of horses that you have to ride too. It's not just you figure out how to ride one kind of horse; you have to figure out how to ride all kinds of horses.
Well, let's take a look. I do notice, because I just went to the selection grid. You and Ron Gierkink are doing it. Not sure who's doing sweep, but you made Mallory's Bandit actually your best bet today in that. That would be the seventh leading into the stake. And Mallory's Bandit's a fat 12-1 with Dakota Wood, who was involved in the DQ. What do you like here in Mallory's Bandit?
Well, this trainer, Marissa Black, I've noticed. She had another one yesterday. Give them one race, and then she seems to be pointing for a lot of times the second race back. The 4 furlong, she ran the horse in a 4 furlong stake, first time at Flanner in February. And if you look back, I mean, yeah, the horse is 5/8 on turf, but I mean, claim for 15. I mean, that to me just looks like a race to get the horse going again. And then I don't know who the clocker is in Flanner, and I haven't had a chance to assess the correlation between the works that we see on paper and performance, but I did notice that April 1st, and there's not a ton of working that I see going on there either. So when I see a horse like this, an older established horse, zip a half mile and a near bullet, going into what looks like a much more suitable spot for a trainer that I've seen do this several times already in the meet, one race, second race, boom. At a price, I love horses like that. I actually really like that horse in that spot. We'll see. I just didn't see a ton of fear in there.
Turn to the stake and the Runza. These are fillies and mares, 3 and ups, going 6.
Yeah, I don't think the line is right on this. They've got Cool Cade as a 5-2 favorite, but I don't see how Love at Night is a favorite. I mean, maybe she is. Maybe she's not. She's 10-12 at Fawner with a second.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive. She won this race, which I think was not as tough last year, but she won this race by 4.5 lengths. She's obviously a dead front runner, and there is other speed in this race. But they usually can keep up with her for whatever reason, especially going 3/4. Third race off a layoff, she's 7, but she looks just as good as that she's ever been. And then if you start digging into horses that might take advantage of a speed duel, I didn't come up with a lot. This horse, Chubb Charmer, just ran a week ago, and I think it's not good enough to take advantage. And then at a shorter price, like I couldn't take a shorter price. And Cool Kate, I know that race at Turf Paradise is mildly encouraging when they cut her back to 6.5 furlongs on December 21st. She did showed enough quick twitch turnover to get into contention, but I mean that's not the same as this race where she's got a 700-foot home stretch, and this horse is I saw her win a Turf Stakes race at Arlington, or I guess she was second in that race. She won several races in Indiana Grand, got really good for Tony Grand this last summer, but like the idea that a strong galloping mile 16th turf horse is going to show the turn of foot necessary to get up at 6 furlongs on a boring. I mean, she's a really good horse if she can do that.
I figured you'd be plenty familiar with Cool Kate.
Oh yeah, I know Cool Kate from back when.
You know, one of the things that came up last week when we handicapped the Tuesday pick five, one of the things that's funny, particularly here at Fonner, is the mix of where these horses originated. And so there's an Illinois bred, 2 Arkansas bred, an Iowa bred, a couple of Nebraska breds, a Kentucky bred, and a Texas bred. So it's kind of fun from that standpoint.
Yeah. I think I kind of like a horse in the last to close it out, too. It's number 6, Holding Fast, for Kelly Martinez, who I wrote a little bit about last week, I think. She really improved her performance several years ago and was able to maintain that. She's in a battle for leading trainer at this meet with horses firing at all levels. That's her husband, A. Martinez. I don't want to say his name wrong. I can't remember exactly what his first name is. But this horse, Holding Fast, comes out of a stakes race. That horse, Ted W., he got really good after being claimed at Turfway. He's in the stakes tomorrow. And this horse, Holding Fast, ran okay from the rail. Second time back off just a 17-day break following a nice winning performance in a race at this level on March 7th. I look for this horse to get a decent trip and bounce back to the top. You know, he's kind of his very top again right now. I think he can win to close this off. I think it's a really good late pick 4 sequence. You got a 10-horse allowance race, which we talked about in the 7th, and then 9-horse allowance race in the 6th to get the sequence started off. That's 6, 7, 8, 9. I think there's plenty to dig into there. It's worth looking at.
Excellent. I agree. And Marcus, this was perfect. I'm sure for a lot of people, they've been holding back and just unsure about how to wade into the action. I hope that this went a long way. I do see a note from Eric on Twitter that he's listening, and he heard us talk about that pick 5 at Will Rogers. He understands that, and I'm pulling up their website, he understands that that pick 5 is going to shift to a jackpot format today. Starting today.
I'm not going to be, especially not knowing, I'm not a fan of jackpot bets, but evidently a lot of people are, so I'm sure it will make some people in the gambling community happy.
Well, and others unhappy, considering how well it's been adopted and how many people have jumped in on it as is. But I'll try to get an answer and official confirmation. Marcus, this was terrific, and appreciate your studious method and the fact that you don't take these assignments lightly, and I hope people take advantage.
Not at all. I've been putting in hours. Trying to establish a personal baseline. It's rough.
Exactly.
I paid off yesterday. For me, I know what you're saying about people like holding fire, because it's difficult to wager with confidence or feel like you're even getting the best of things when you're still trying to understand all the things that are going on at the track. But they all have their little permutations, and if you're interested in the sport and interested in handicapping, I don't think that you'd be wasting your time looking at either of these tracks and try to wrap your mind around them.
Marcus Hirsch, everybody, DRF Hirsch on Twitter, and Marcus, a big help. The international scene, and of course, Chicagoland fairgrounds during the winter, and now Foner and Will Rogers. Marcus, stay safe. Thanks so much.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Marcus Hirsch. Let's take a break. Top of the hour. What we're going to do, we kind of ran through the slot that we were going to have for Kim Weir. Kim will join us after Sid. Sid Fernando, Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale, although today a little bit more, you know, strictly business. We'll do Pedigree and that fascinating page of Mr. Big News tomorrow. But I want to talk about Sid's very interesting business piece from Thursday in TDN, Fear Index and Foal Crops. Plus, Sid will tell you about Mr. Fipke's very generous offer to waive the stud fees on the seven stallions of his around the country. Back after this, Sid Fernando joins us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at HorseBills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice. Voices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit...